Okay, we're gonna bring the Security Committee to order.
One more time.
If we could have roll call, please.
The board's getting ready to move forward with security. Can we please take our seats or not?
Chair McMichael?
Here.
Vice Chair Geddes?
Here.
Regent Boylan? Regent Brooks? Regent Moran?
Here.
Regent Tarkanian?
Present.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. And we will move to agenda item one, public comments. Do we have any public comments in Elko?
No public comment in Elko this time.
Thank you. Any public comments in Reno?
No public comment in Reno.
Thank you. And any public comments in Las Vegas? Seeing none, we will move on to agenda item number two. Minutes for possible action. Do we have any one would wish to?
Second.
Okay. We have a second. Who was the second?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Regent Moran. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I'll second the motion.
And we have approval for the motion?
Aye.
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 Everyone? Any dissents? Hearing none, we will move on to agenda item three, chair's report. I wish to welcome the Southern and Northern Command structure. I understand that Director Garcia isn't here today, but Lieutenant Summerlin will be speaking in on behalf, and also wish to welcome Director James. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Oh, we haven't gotten to item four yet.
Okay.
We're on the chair's report. And I would like to remind everyone that certain items that we may want to speak on in the security committee today, we would like to be in used that in general terms and not in specific terms that might compromise security programs that are in effect. We don't want to wish to have the opposition know exactly what we're doing so that they would have better knowledge of how to get around our security. So if we please would keep these questions in general, mostly those that are already in public knowledge. Thank you. Now we'll go to agenda item number four. Senate Bill 347, Sexual Misconduct Task Force, and this is information only. Dr. Rose, would you please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and for the record, Melody Rose, Chancellor. Thank you, committee members, for inviting me to make this presentation. I'm pleased to do so. You may recall from the 2021 legislative session that the legislature passed and the governor signed Senate Bill 347, the Task Force on Sexual Misconduct at Institutions of Higher Education was established pursuant to that statute, and we convened for the very first time on February 17th, just a couple of weeks ago. As you may recall, that legislation really bubbled up from concerns on our campuses and students in particular who voiced a desire to have more oversight of sexual misconduct policy and consideration of a system-wide, consistent sexual misconduct survey instrument that would be administered regularly across NSHE campuses. So the bill, as enrolled, is available to you, of course, and we have Deputy Counsel Russum on the line if we want more detail about the statute itself. My aim in this brief update was just to tell you about the work of the committee in its first convening and what I imagine will be future effort. And I am pleased to say that there are several committee members with us here in the audience and very grateful for their service. So the bill, as enrolled, named the NSHE Chancellor and NSHE Chief General Counsel to membership of this committee, and as well defined very clear categories of expertise from the campuses which needed to be filled, so as to make sure that the committee had survey research skill, advocacy skill, and other forms of pertinent professional occupational representation. And you may remember that the presidents and I worked collaboratively to make sure that we offered up to you a list of nominees to fill out the balance of the committee that both honored those categories as established by statute, but also well represented our institutions. And some months ago, you appointed the members of this committee. And as I say, we met for the very first time in NSHE offices on February 17th. We were joined at this first meeting by bill sponsors, Assemblywoman Torres and Senator Scheibel. It was really an honor to have them there to celebrate the achievement of their vision and to launch the task force with them in attendance. And I think all members of the task force really felt honored to have them present and encouraging of our work. After brief interviews of the committee, because as you might imagine, this is a diverse set of members from the NSHE community. We did not know one another in advance, so we did take some time to get to know one another, understanding that we'll be working together on some very sensitive matters in the next months and years. And having those relationships, I think, is always conducive to better outcomes. So after both having the time for introductions as well as reviewing the legislation, we were presented by the campuses with two sets of information from each of our instructional campuses. One was their CLERI data. So in other words, their official recording of sexual misconduct crimes over a period of years so that we could have a sense of what the official reported numbers look like at our institutions. But we were also presented with trends and data as it pertains to any current climate surveys that the institutions might conduct. And there we really recognize the breadth and the diversity of past experience. There are campuses within the NSHE family that have not conducted a sexual misconduct survey to date. There are others who have very sophisticated survey instruments, and we have much to learn, of course, from those, and sort of everything in between. So it was a really wonderful level setting for the committee to understand the current state of play in this policy arena before diving into any recommendations or actions. So we were grateful for the participation of the institutions and their presentations. The conversation then really moved to how does the committee move forward in its work within the charge that has been established by the legislature. And what we determined in the meeting is that we really need to do an environmental scan of best practices, both in terms of sexual misconduct policy reporting, but especially survey instruments, because that is one of the very clear charges of the legislation is to produce such and to bring forward a plan to this board for doing so. So what we agreed was that we would gather some of the best practices, both from within our institutions and from across the country, so that we don't feel the need to reinvent the wheel if there are well-established protocols and scientific practices we want to, of course, follow those. So several of my colleagues on the committee are expert in that field of research and surfaced several items for us to bring back at our next meeting so that we can begin to educate ourselves about the existing best practices literature. And then the final action was to select officers for the committee, and I'm very touched and honored to say that I was elected chair of this body, and my colleague, Dr. Elizabeth Gunn, who is a faculty member here at NSC, was elected vice chair. Dean. Thank you very much. I was thinking more about her research prowess and its relevance to our work. So next steps will be to call another meeting of the committee and to review and hear best practices in survey research around sexual misconduct. I did brief the presidents on our developments on Wednesday during Council of Presidents and got their input and guidance as well. And I'm pleased to say that this effort is moving forward. And as you may recall from the statute itself, the Board of Regents and the role of the Board of Regents in hearing proposals, considering and hopefully adopting procedures and policies around sexual misconduct surveys and policies is deeply embedded in the legislation. And so I will be coming to you in the future with such recommendations, and in the interim, happy to keep you informed and updated. And with that, Chair McMichael, I conclude my report and happy to stand for any questions or comments.
Yes. Are there any questions or comments in regards to this agenda item? Hearing none, we will move on to agenda item 5, Enchi Southern Command. And again, this is information only. If we could have Lieutenant Summerlin.
All right. Good morning. Next slide, please. Good morning, Chair McMichael, committee members, Chancellor Rose, and presidents. For the record, my name is Lieutenant Tony Summerlin with University Police Services Southern Command. Unfortunately, Director Garcia was unable to attend today, but he has asked to provide you with this quarterly update on public safety activities for Southern Command. But before I do that, I would like to share a message from Director Garcia and the great men and women that work for our department. If we could please play the video.
The dedicated men and women of University Police Services are committed to providing a safe and secure learning environment for all of our campuses based on empathy, responsiveness, professionalism, and appropriate visibility with our community's best interests and safety in mind. Our institutions represent a community of citizens with diverse backgrounds, life experience, and education. We embrace and support the values of diversity, equity, and safety for all of our students, employees, and members of the public. University Police Services takes proactive measures in creating and maintaining a safe educational and social environment for all through a community policing philosophy and a commitment to community relations and outreach. The ongoing racial injustices witnessed throughout our nation can be a chronic source of distress and one that must be confronted. We must be proactive in recognizing that we've been indelibly changed by recent events. The department has already taken several steps to ensure our policies and training comply and support our community's health and safety standards. And we acknowledge that the implementation of long-term solutions is necessary to lead in these areas so that accountability, transparency, increased awareness, and communication become an integral part of law enforcement practices. To ensure that practices are utilized at every opportunity, for every training scenario and during every public encounter. To strengthen ties and build partnerships, we encourage our campuses to participate in department events and engage with our officers at various community-hosted engagements throughout the semester. Participate in offered safety trainings and self-defense classes. Take advantage of student cadet evening safety instruments and connect with us in person or on social media for other services and questions. We can often be seen interacting with the community on foot, bike, golf cart, and vehicle choice. The department also has various specialized units, including a state-of-the-art dispatch center and emergency communication team, which handles over 1 million radio transmissions annually, an investigation and intelligence unit, a student cadet program, which provides evening safety escorts to and from campus locations, an emergency management division, which supported and guided multiple campus operations during the COVID-19 pandemic, and of course the campus favorites, the department's bomb detection canines, Macy, Astra, and Leia, who along with their handlers ensure the safety of the more than 1 million guests annually at university and college special events and athletics games.
Our campuses are safe campuses. But like anywhere, you can become the victim of a crime. My name is Adam Garcia. I'm the Vice President of Public Safety Services. A central tenet of our department, since its consolidation, has been one of a cultural shift from traditional policing to a true community-oriented policing model. This model believes that partnering with you, our community, is the first step to prevention. The cultural shift is in many ways seismic, but I want to assure you of our commitment to you. Our officers and team members are committed to challenge themselves to think better, do better, and be better. There is yet more work to be done, and we will do so in collaboration with you, our community. I am proud to serve you, and I look forward to working with you and continuing to create a safe and welcoming environment across all of our institutions. Thank you.
Madam Chair? Madam Chair? Well, I'm sorry. My fault. You know what, sir? I was thinking that they had put a lot of time into that video and that some of that messaging may not have been heard because we had some audio problems. I just don't know if it's appropriate to replay that video, if they can fix that, or at least play the last part of that video so that everybody receives the message. But I just thought I would ask you and see if that's something that we can do.
Yes. Is that possible at this time? If we could clear up the audio portion.
We're still working on figuring out what caused it, so I'd say we probably need a little more
time. Chair McMichaels?
Yes.
While they're queuing that up, I have a couple of follow-up questions, if you don't mind, if the lieutenant.
Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Chair. First off, I wanted to say thank you for all of the hard work that you've put in to this committee in terms of driving this committee forward. And I just think that you've done a tremendous job, and I just wanted to say I appreciate it. I'm privileged to sit on this committee, and thank you for that. Lieutenant, my platform was always affordability and accessibility, but I also had that public safety side of things and health and safety kind of tie in. And safety is so important, and what you guys have done through this consolidation is really quite incredible.
Thank you, sir.
I wanted to take my hat off and essentially say I appreciate your time and your efforts in making sure that we have a safe, secure practice. I also have had conversations with our sheriff. He's indicated that you guys are sharing information, and
yes, sir,
it's really, really good. And you know, power, communication is power. And so, you know, you're doing a great job. And also, Mr. Chair, I actually have firsthand knowledge of the great job that our police force is doing. I was actually pulled over the other day, and I got pulled over for going too slow. In any event, thank you again for your time. I appreciate it, and keep up the good work, and be safe out there.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Lieutenant. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If we're still working on the video, I can continue with my presentation, if that pleases the board.
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay, you can go to the next slide, please. Relating to our outreach and recruitment efforts, the department will be taking part in the UNLV Veterans Career Fair this Saturday and the UNLV Career Fair on March 8th and March 9th.
Along with that, the Las Vegas office of the FBI and the department will be hosting the 2022 Southern Nevada Law Enforcement Career Fair on April 26th at UNLV Student Union. Currently, we do have 6 new officers that are in field training, with an additional 4 officers that are currently attending the Southern Desert Regional Police Academy. We have 2 dispatchers that have just recently been hired for our dispatch center, but there continue to be 24 vacancies currently in those 2 areas. Discussions are in the final stages of creating a CSN Community Service Officer program to replace the third-party security officer contract that is currently in use, with implementation scheduled for spring of 2022. This will allow for greater investment in the community, improved training, improved hiring practices for security personnel, and more efficient overall operations. Next slide, please. As you know, the department has established a public safety advisory board, which is meant to enhance the lines of communication between the 4 campuses that we serve and the department. This is chaired by Amy, I apologize, Amy, in advance if I ruin your last name, Evaluna, Interim Director of the Division of College and Community Relations at Nevada State College, and co-chaired by Dr. Renee Watson, Associate Vice President of the Student Life at UNLV. The board it represents by its members of all institutions in Southern Nevada and is scheduled to meet again next week. Since February 14th of 2019, the department has submitted for $3.8 million in grant funding for safety initiatives and enhancements, with a total received of over $2 million for numerous projects, which include a live scan fingerprint machine, HOPE unit funding, regional de-escalation training center, joining forces traffic safety and enforcement, as well as portable anti-vehicular barrier system barricades that can be used on all of our campuses during high-profile events. UPD's Central Dispatch Center has seen a 15% year-over-year increase in telephone calls and handled over 1 million radio transmissions throughout 2021. Last month, the department successfully tested all emergency notification systems, with notifications sent to a broad range of endpoints, including over 78,000 mobile devices reached through the emergency test text message. The department has served as a leader for COVID-19 response and mitigated by representing UNLV, CSN, DRI, and NSC at the NSHE representatives to the Clark County Regional Policy Group. And Director Garcia, Assistant Director Engel, and Assistant Director May have served as the representatives to the NSHE COVID-19 Task Force. Finally, the department has sustained a strong COVID-19 response by facilitating over 500,000 vaccines and tests for the NSHE community at UNLV, CSN, and NSC campuses, which has earned both Director Garcia and Assistant Director May the 2021 UNLV Top Tier Award for COVID-19 mitigation work. Congratulations, Director May. The department has several upcoming safety trainings, which will include a virtual self-defense class and active assailant training to be scheduled in March and April. Officers will also be participating in Nevada Reading Week events at Elaine Wynn Elementary School, along with a number of new initiatives such as partnership with the UNLV Bike Shop to offer free bike locks to students in need, and a cooperative effort with UNLV Student Affairs to install scooter skateboard racks at the UNLV Maryland campus. Next slide, please. With the support of Chancellor Rose, UPD will host the annual International Association of Campus Law Enforcement Administrators to be held in June at the MGM Grand Hotel and Conference Center. ICLEA is the largest professional association dedicated to excellence in campus public safety and law enforcement. The membership is comprised of police chiefs, public safety directors, law enforcement officers, and security personnel at higher education institutions across the globe. The annual conference and exposition has experts in campus public safety who provide keynote sessions, 40-plus concurrent education breakout sessions, an expo featuring all of the latest products and services that are available to the profession, and networking opportunities. It is anticipated that hundreds of delegates will attend from around the world, with 50 to 75 speakers and over 100-plus vendors. This will be the first in-person conference to be held for the group since the onset of the COVID pandemic. Next slide, please. As you may recall, in the aftermath of 2020, murder of Minneapolis, Minnesota resident George Floyd and the social upheaval that followed, the department, with the encouragement and support of UNLV President Keith Whitfield, was designated as the National Regional De-escalation Training Center by the United States Department of Justice, responsible for police de-escalation training throughout Nevada, California, Idaho, Hawaii, Utah, Washington, and Oregon. This designation came with a $1.25 million award. Working with our regional law enforcement partners and the criminal justice departments at UNLV, CSN, and Nevada State College, the implementation will be completed in spring of 2022. The designation puts three institutions, but specifically UNLV, on the national stage for sensibility police reform and on the cutting edge of policing. In late fall of 2021, CSN President Dr. Zaragoza took the bold step of moving the CSN Southern Desert Regional Police Academy under the responsibility of University Police Services Southern Command. Operating the academy in conjunction with CSN, Criminal Justice Department, and other partnering agencies, the new academy is using the requirements that are established by Nevada law to instruct police recruits using community policing as the foundation, emphasizing verbal and physical de-escalation diversity, social justice, and ethical behavior. The goal is to ultimately establish partnerships with the Clark County School District and begin an offender program from the regional high schools, leading young people to change their world by joining this noble profession. The inaugural academy class comprised of University Police Services, the City of Las Vegas, the 8th Judicial Court, the Nevada Attorney General's Office, and Las Vegas Municipal Marshal Service will graduate 14 new recruits in June of 2022. Please be on the lookout for the invitation, as we would love you all to attend. In the area of emergency management, the CSN, next slide, please. CSN Continues of Operation Plan, COOP, is nearing completion. The support team is in the process of reviewing the plan and will provide feedback to the group on the content for consideration. The fourth and final co-op training session occurred in January with two additional co-op tabletops. Exercise planned for March, and these exercises will engage CSN staff in their ability to implement their co-op plans in a learning environment at the North Las Vegas campus. The next Community Emergency Response Team, which is CERT, training is also scheduled for March. This training offers participation the opportunity to learn to help themselves and others during an emergency event. In addition, exercises at the CSN West Charleston campus is being planned in an effort to objectively evaluate key life safety processes and functions that are related to recent real-world events. The proposal is to conduct a full-scale exercise that simulates a bomb threat at a pre-selected building located on one of the campuses. The size and scope of the exercise will test our emergency notification system, building evacuation procedures, command and control on the scene, building sweep protocols, and co-op activation processes for the campus department affected by this exercise. The exercise will likely take place in April or May. At UNLV, a series of cybersecurity tabletop exercises are in the initial planning stages. The two-phase exercise is designated to test protocols and procedures in response to a denial of service, to a denial of services or ransomware attacks. For all of our campuses, the National Science and Technology Council's list of critical and emerging technologies is being reviewed, and research is being conducted for any applicable items that may benefit our campuses. The department's emergency operations plan is undergoing review and will reflect current organizational and communications best practices. Finally, we are conducting a review of records that each institution is in compliance with the National Incident Management System, which ultimately affects NSHE's eligibility for federal grants. As in the director's previous report, the department continues to struggle to fill positions, and we continue to seek qualified candidates who are reflective of our community and the commitment we have. So if any of you are interested in a career change, please let me know. The director is working with the NG leadership and the Northern Command director on several proposals to help attract qualified candidates and retain the valued employees that we currently have. As the proposal furthers its development, these plans will be presented to the full board for your review. This does conclude my presentation. The director wanted me to thank each of the presidents, Chancellor Rose, and CSN Vice President James McCoy for all of the support as the department continues on its journey of being a world-class university police department that will be second to none. Thank you so much for your time.
Yes. Thank you very much. And we're going to queue up that video and see if we can get a better quality running on it. If you could.
The dedicated men and women of University Police Services are committed to providing a safe and secure learning environment for all of our campuses based on empathy, responsiveness, professionalism, and appropriate visibility with our community's best interests and safety in mind. Our institutions represent a community of citizens with diverse backgrounds, life experience, and education. We embrace and support the values of diversity, equity, and safety for all of our students, employees, and members of the public. University Police Services takes proactive measures in creating and maintaining a safe educational and social environment for all through a community policing philosophy and a commitment to community relations and outreach. The ongoing racial injustices witnessed throughout our nation can be a chronic source of distress and one that must be confronted. We must be proactive in recognizing that we've been indelibly changed by recent events. The department has already taken several steps to ensure our policies and training comply and support our community's health and safety standards. And we acknowledge that the implementation of long-term solutions is necessary to lead in these areas so that accountability, transparency, increased awareness, and communication become an integral part of law enforcement practices to ensure that practices are utilized at every opportunity, for every training scenario, and during every public encounter. To strengthen ties and build partnerships, we encourage our campuses to participate in department events and engage with our officers at various community-hosted engagements throughout the semester. Participate in offered safety trainings and self-defense classes. Take advantage of student cadet evening safety escorts and connect with us in person or on social media for other services and questions. We can often be seen interacting with the community on foot, bike, golf cart, and vehicle patrols. The department also has various specialized units, including a state-of-the-art dispatch center and emergency communications unit, which handles over 1 million radio transmissions annually, an investigation and intelligence unit, a student cadet program, which provides evening safety escorts to and from campus locations, an emergency management division, which supported and guided multiple campus operations during the COVID-19 pandemic, and, of course, the campus favorites, the department's bomb detection canines, Macy, Astra, and Leia, who along with their handlers ensure the safety of the more than 1 million guests annually at university and college special events and athletics games.
Our campuses are safe campuses. But like anywhere, you can become the victim of a crime. My name is Adam Garcia. I am the Vice President of Public Safety Services. A central tenet of our department since its consolidation has been one of a cultural shift from traditional policing to a true community-oriented policing model. This model believes that partnering with you, our community, is the first step to prevention. The cultural shift is in many ways seismic, but I want to assure you of our commitment to you. Our officers and team members are committed to challenge themselves to think better, do better, and be better. There is yet more work to be done, and we will do so in collaboration with you, our community. I am proud to serve you, and I look forward to working with you and continuing to create a safe and welcoming environment across all of our institutions. Thank you.
Yes, that's much better. Do we have any questions or statements? I understand that CSUN President Karen Yep would like to speak.
Okay, sorry, I've never done this before. Hello, everyone. My name is Karen Yap, YAP for the record. I serve as the student body president for UNLV CSUN Student Government. So recently on the UNLV campus, due to the recent actions of individuals around campus, it's led to multiple emergency incidents that have deeply negatively impacted the mental health of our students. And I know that through all of them, University Police Services has been able to provide a quick response, which I and several students deeply appreciate. So thank you as well. I did have a few questions. So in regards to the bomb threat simulation taking place in April or May, I just was wondering how often those are conducted and how those particular buildings are selected. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great question. This is the first simulation that we're doing of this sort. So we're going to be sending out information about that, and the building will be selected based off of the location. And also we have to keep in mind that since classes are in session, that we need to be mindful that we're not disrupting the classes that are taking place. So they'll select a building that best suits this particular drill, which will allow ourselves and all the other programs that are involved to gauge our response, and then we can make necessary corrections.
Yes, so do we have any other questions or statements? Yes. Yes, Chancellor Rose.
Thank you, Chair McMichael. For the record, Chancellor Melody Rose. Lieutenant, I just want to thank you for the extraordinary effort that you and the entire Southern Command has demonstrated over the past year. You all have stepped up to every request that I've made, be that enhanced security of our buildings and our meetings, or specifically training my staff in the ENCHI Southern office. So I just want to say thank you, because the effort has been incredible. And I want the board to know that in national chancellor circles, we are known for our Southern Command and the exceptional leadership of Director Garcia, particularly because I think he was doing community policing before it was cool. And we are really, really fortunate. And when I speak to other chancellors across the country, they ask me about our success. So I wanted to thank you.
Thank you. It was an honor.
Any other questions or statements?
Thank you, sir.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Lieutenant. Okay, we're going to move on to agenda item number 6, ENCHI Northern Command, and again, this is information only. Director James.
Good morning. Everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Excellent, excellent. Well, good morning, committee members. My name is Eric James. I'm the Chief of Police here in Northern Nevada. If I can get the slides up on the screen, that'd be fantastic. By the way, fantastic job, Lieutenant. There we go. All right, so next slide, please. So I just want to kind of cover and outline some of the things that we've done over the past quarter for the hardworking men and women of the police department up here. Last year, with the help of our grant writer, Sierra, we have received almost $400,000 in grant funds, which is phenomenal. This is a collaborative effort between us and sponsored projects. And Sierra is a fabulous worker for us, and she gets a lot of funds for us, as you can see. Funding was used for traffic safety, perimeter security, and underage drinking enforcement. And WNC actually received a very large sum of this to retrofit the external lock systems down at the campus to kind of update it with a remote automated locking system. This will allow, pretty much with a cell phone, the ability to lock and unlock buildings as opposed to using a hard key. So thank you, Sarah, for that. That was phenomenal. Next slide, please. So in 2020, my predecessor, Todd Renwick, he started working with the University School of Social Work. And through that, we have continued that partnership all the way through, even through COVID, into this semester as well. And so on the screen, I can't quite see it because I'm covering it at the time, but you will see Nimra. She is our current intern worker. She is fabulous. She goes out with the officers. She makes contact with individuals, and she's working for her social work degree as well as getting her experience and training the officers as well. So it's a fabulous partnership that is going so well, and we will absolutely be continuing it into the next semester as well. Next slide, please. So we, here at the university, we saw a need. Our camera system is rather antiquated. And so through a lot of conversations with stakeholders, funding's been secure that we can do the process of actually getting a new camera system here in place. The key was trying to retrofit, not put it on something new, so we're not tearing up buildings, but just sort of using the old lines as possible. So that will be an overhaul of the system to improve the overall safety for our university. The stakeholders included facilities maintenance, student services, the medical school, our department, Res Life, and it comprised a committee to select that camera vendor. They are currently in meeting session right now to get that up and started. So really excited about that, because if you the old system, it really was time for us to upgrade. And I have to think, I really got to thank President Sandoval and Vic Redding for that as well, because they really helped out with it. And it really shows the commitment to the safety and security that they show to our university as well. Next slide, please. So some of our initiatives that we do, community relations and support services position. We sent out and posted for a new position that we are going to have someone within our department. It's a civilian position. It's not an officer position. Someone within our department that is going to be kind of like using as a bridge to bridge those gaps with those underrepresented communities and minorities that will help us to sort of get in. And this individual will be out there not only making contact, setting up meetings, but also using that to train our staff as well on diversity, equity initiatives, and help the officers become more culturally competent in their everyday dealings with some of our staff members. The staff has attended many group meetings with TMCC, UNR, WNC, GBC. We continue to meet with all of our constituents every opportunity we get. And then we actually had a little outreach program, as you can see down below, with our golf carts, where we had officers out giving away ice cream. And President Sandoval jumped on with that as well. ASUN was part of it. And it was a really nice event where we gave away almost 1,000 pieces of ice cream. And I didn't eat them all, but we did give away quite a few. So I was very encouraged at the overwhelming response from the students, faculty, and staff to come get ice cream from the officers. I thought it was a really great event. Next slide, please. So some of the things we also continue to do, we also provide the workplace violence, workplace safety virtually. We do it in person as well. We provided de-escalation training for student services, the WNC civilian staff, and the Disability Resource Center Peer Mentor Summer Bridge. And so what we do is we have our ICAT program for the officers. We sort of turned that into a model for a little bit more of that civilian side. And so Sergeant Wilson has been teaching that, and we have found that it is really well taken because of the way that and the degree that the de-escalation can occur. We still have an executive member who sits on the Diversity Summit Subcommittee and the Equity and Inclusion Subcommittee. Last year, John Pratt, who runs the Veterans Resource Center, former Marine, along with members of our department, began a new UNR veteran support team to help UNR veterans connect with each other. And it's kind of interesting because John and I had been working together for 10, 12 years, and we had never known that we were actually both former Marines. And so we looked at each other like, wow, that's crazy. And so what we started to do is find a way that we can reach out to help members, not only students, but faculty and staff as well, that may have been members or are members or even have family members, that we can just provide some input, because vets will talk to vets and sometimes they won't talk to other people. And so a lot of times we gather around with our group and we just have conversations about some of the things that are affecting us in the world or you know within our own area. So it's a new program we're just putting together. We're just doing it our own time, but it's been really well received. And then officers continue to instruct at the Weekend Fitness Center for our PEX and drop-in classes. We teach CrossFit, we teach rape aggression defense training, we teach Girls on Guard. We have scheduled trainings for the Girls on Guard on Mondays and also on Wednesdays. CrossFit is done every single morning at 6:30 a.m. And our RAC class, the rape aggression defense class, is actually done at 7:30 at night on Wednesdays. It's a one-credit class, and it's phenomenal. It's Deputy Chief Reynolds teaches that. It's just great. So we continue to be embedded with our constituents that we so want to get in touch with, and this is just one of the great ways that we can do that. Next slide, please. So organizational resiliency highlights. So We have Amanda Wins and Matt Williams, who are within our department. They're a little separate, but they're still within our department. So Matt was hired at the new position of Organizational Resiliency Coordinator September of 21, after spending 5 years with the Nevada Department of Emergency Response and Planning. Matt brings so much knowledge, and it's a great fit for our department as well as Northern Nevada. Created and executed a university-wide leadership tabletop exercise for spring of 21 to focus on the extreme drought. We responded to the Caldera fire in support of Sierra Nevada University, created brand new evacuation and continuity programs to ensure their institutional success and response and recovery to the threat of wildfire in a very compressed timeline. I got to say, hats off to Amanda for that and Jill Heaton. They were absolutely incredible in making sure that SNU knew that we were there to assist them however we could. Analyzed and revised university climate weather. See, up here in Northern Nevada, we get snow. Maybe not so much in Southern Nevada, but sometimes it really affects what we do. And so looking at our response and how we do things, it can be a real challenge sometimes with our snow. And so working through that with efficiencies and messaging based on those remote options, which have worked out very well. And then we acted as a liaison with UNR with multiple counties throughout Nevada and ANSI employees, Nevada, Washoe County Health District, and the Nevada Division of Emergency Management, and provided dynamic updates and insights to COVID-19. We meet every Tuesday, and the IMT meets every Wednesday, talking about policy procedures impacting university. And I think the most exciting thing up there is Amanda Wins, our Organizational Resiliency Manager. She received her doctorate this year, and I can't just say how absolutely proud I am of her that she put in a lot of time and effort. So congratulations, Amanda. Next slide, please. I wanted to kind of give an overview of our training and education. So our total number of department training hours was almost 3,000 for the entire department, which averaged out to about 75 hours per officer. Post only requires 12 up and above over anything you cover. So we're well above that standard because of the block training that we do. We had 5 members earn or their intermediate and or advanced post certificates. We taught de-escalation to community partners, basic instructor development, and first-line supervisor at post and for post. We held a class up here last year as well. We taught field safety to the Washoe County Child Protective Services. We hosted Stop the Bleeding information booths at UNR and WNC. And we're also getting into some of our classrooms to teach the Stop the Bleeding campaign as well, because we do have those Stop the Bleed trauma kits on campus. And so we think people should know how to use them. And then we have staff instructed at the Northern Nevada Law Enforcement Academy in areas like firearms, defensive tactics, ethics, patrol procedures, active shooter, and a whole host of other things as well. Next slide, please. Some of our internal department highlights. We had a couple new officers come on board last year joining our team, Officer Brianna Parrish and Officer Eddie Pinion. He's going through training right now. Two great people who joined our team and are just fabulous members. I always get a kick out of Officer Barry up at TMCC because he always plays along with the quote reindeer games that happen up there. And so his community involvement service up there is phenomenal. And the community just loves Officer Barry. My kids go to school up there and they always tell me about how Officer Barry told us the dad joke of the day. And so I'm always, I always chuckle because he always has a good joke, but I'm also, highly encouraged by the fact that my children every single day are seeing Officer Barry and the members up at TMCC. And then down that lower left hand side, you can see is our team down at UNC, who continues just to do fabulous work for us. And then we did have some promotions this last year with Lieutenant Nero, Sergeant Baker, and Sergeant Wilson. So congratulations to all of them as well. Next slide, please. Well, one of, I think, the best department highlight, and not to take away anything from everyone, is our new facility dog, Aspen. Aspen is a one-year-old golden doodle. She was donated to us for the 4E Healing Hearts program out of Las Vegas. And she was evaluated and selected based on her temperament and high touch tolerance. And she loves to be petted. She was donated to us, and she now resides with Lauren Reed, our victim advocate. And while meeting with victims and assisting officers who may encounter traumatic events while on duty. And so it isn't just a community, but it's also within the department as well. And as you can see, she has absolutely made her rounds from Nimra, our student intern, all the way down to President Sandoval. So she is a fabulous partner within, and quite honestly, there's nothing more delightful than to see her come trotting down the hallway into the office when I'm eating popcorn, because she knows what's coming. So, but a great member and really on Lauren for reaching out and thinking outside of the box to find something that we can use for our department, not only for community outreach, but to help victims of crime as well. And next slide, please. I believe that was the last slide. So that is my presentation. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you very much. And are there any questions or statements?
Just yes. A quick comment, Mr. Chair. Once a Marine, always a Marine, sir. You're always a Marine. Thank you.
Thank you. I would do my standard response, but I'm on video, so I won't.
So are there any other questions? Yes.
Hi, thank you. Thank you, Chair. I want to say thank you to Director James and his crew, in particular the WNC crew of Chris, Adam, Jesus, Ed, and Roberto for their safety preparation. We don't have a lot of incidents at a rural institution, but I know when something happens at one of our sites, that's probably an hour plus on the road. So I appreciate that. And also the help you guided us in our post-academy development or redevelopment because it's a change of program. So I appreciate that. And I just wanted to give a shout out to the team. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Any additional questions or statements?
Thank you so much. Karen Hilgerson for the record, TMCC. I just wanted to echo how much fun it's been to work with Director James and Officer Barry, who is the jokester at the campus, but also a very serious officer. But I must admit, I'm a little disappointed that I've not met Aspen yet. And I expect to see her trotting down the TMCC hallways to my office, too, hopefully soon. Anyway, thanks so much.
President Hilgerson, I know we meet next week, so I will bring her up.
Yes, Regent Geddes.
Thank you. Just a follow-up to President Dalpy's comment there. Is the POST program completely done and up and running, or are we still reactivating it?
So thank you, Kyle Dalpy, for the record. It went through ARSA yesterday. Sorry, I'm missing up my meetings. Went through Academic Affairs Council yesterday. So it will come forward to the June meeting, and we're looking at implementation next year as early as fall.
Okay, and then just secondary is a question. I know when we approved the Northern Command structure, we talked about rotating the officers through all the campuses. So do you have like a designated officer for each campus and then others are rotating? Or are we just kind of sticking people to the campus and working with that model?
So Eric James, for the record, GBC, Officer Gruber lives out there, right? GBC is a long way away. So Officer Gruber and the security safety team out at GBC, they stay out there. Our other officers do rotate. TMCC has positions as well, so we do rotate people through. WNC is a little more challenging because it is down in Carson City, and so like Sergeant Wilson does live down in Dayton, and so it's very challenging to make it, but we do have officers that go down there pretty regularly to whether it's to cover shift or to go down and provide traffic enforcement, or we have coffee with the cop, pizza with the police, with the student groups down there. And so we do get a lot of intake down there as well. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions or statements? Thank you very much, Director James. And
thank you, sir.
We will now move on to agenda item number 7, NCHI Cybersecurity. Again, this is information only. Dr. Ann Milkovic.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair McMichael. And I'm happy to be here to give you an update on cybersecurity activities and our defenses against them. So as you're probably reading, the hostilities that are occurring and on globally right now, also have an increase in cyber crime. So warfare nowadays is cyber warfare also. So we are definitely on high alert for watching for cyber crime that might have a higher impact on us than normal. For us, a common one would be the increase in DDoS attacks, which is distributed denial of service. And if you're not familiar with this type of attack, you remember back in the olden days, like a few years ago, when if a lot of activity hit a server or a website all at the same time, it brought that website or that server down. Well, since then, we've made those servers and websites far more robust, and so it's less likely to occur. But on a very large scale, it still does occur. So as hostilities have increased, we have seen a corresponding increase in DDoS attacks. We, HireEd, is not a particularly favorite target for DDoS attacks. They're looking for larger impact. So, for example, cloud carriers are preferred because they can cause a lot more harm with one attack than they could attacking a HireEd institution. As an example, one of the largest DDoS attacks occurred in November against a customer on Microsoft Azure's cloud platform. They were able to hit that customer with an attack at 1.7 trillion characters per second. So at that scale, it is possible to still bring somebody down. Now, Microsoft was able to defend against that attack. That is the largest one that's ever been seen. I'd also like to say that cybercrime is big business. It's not just crime. It's large-scale crime for money, of course. You can now hire a DDoS attack, and the average cost to hire a DDoS attack is about $300 per month. So it's pretty easy, if you are the right or the wrong kind of person, however you look at it, to go to a website, pull out your credit card, and you can order what kind of an attack you want, against what country, against what region, and for how much money at what scale. So it is very well-organized crime. Now, that's not, again, the biggest threat towards higher education. Higher education and the education sector in general is a favored attack for ransomware. The education sector receives approximately 63% of all ransomware attacks. All other industries are at less than 10% of total ransomware attacks. So we get the great brunt of it. That's over healthcare, over finance. Those industries are all below 10%. We're at 63%. The number of ransomware attacks in recent years has increased, by example, year over year from 2019 to 2020. The number of ransomware attacks increased by 485%. So it's highly increasing, rapidly increasing, and we're their favorite target. And there are reasons for why we're a favorite target that I'll get into when I start talking about NSHE defenses. The greatest vehicle for an attack of ransomware is through the simple trick of phishing email. Trick a human being into clicking a link. That's all it is. It's 45% of all attacks come through a simple email trick. And we're all very quick and efficient about managing our email. We see the email, we see we've got to do this, you got to click here. It's muscle memory habit that will oftentimes click that link because it takes time and conscious thinking to stop and say, wait a minute, where did this come from? I've never heard this before. You have to engage your thinking mind. And once you've gotten efficient at a task, your brain can bypass your thinking side and just go and kick into muscle memory, hit the delete key a bunch of times when you see stuff, or accidentally click a link. We are all subject to that. So it's not a matter of, you know, the IT people are really great at avoiding that. We're all subject to muscle memory and habit. So it can happen to anybody, even people who are well-trained. The average cost for, and I assumed that everybody was familiar with ransomware attacks, but let me go ahead and define it just for the record. So if it's a matter of stealing somebody's data, you trick somebody into clicking a link, or there are other ways of getting that malware, the malicious software, onto a server or a desktop or a computer somewhere. But you get the most common way is you trick somebody into clicking a link so it installs. And then it corrupts the data on the system and sends it to the attacker. We call them bad actors. We also call them black hats. We call them bad guys. We borrow a lot of words from real life when describing cyber activities. So then once they own that data, then they insist that you start paying money. This is just basic blackmail. I've got stuff you want. I'm not going to give it back until you give me some money. Well, what happens with blackmail? If you start paying for the data that you need to get back, there's a good chance you won't ever get your data back. You might not get all of it back. It might not have uncorrupted as well as it got corrupted in the first place. So you might have now bad data that you got back. Plus, 80% of organizations that actually pay the ransom will be attacked again by either the same bad actors or different bad actors who found out, oh, that's a hot target right there. Let's go for that one. 32% of organizations that paid the ransomware had to pay additional funds. Okay, great. You gave us the $300,000. We really appreciate that. We'll give you some of our data back, but we're going to need more money before we're going to give it all to you back. But meanwhile, there is a secondary market for that data. So I hate to say it, but I'm kind of impressed about how well they figure these things out. I would never make a good criminal because I don't think of these things. But now they can sell that data to somebody else. So while they're extorting you or us to pay them to get the data back, meanwhile, they're selling it on a secondary market to somebody else who now wants that data. The secondary market is robust, but it also has a short shelf life because they know that data is not the value of having that avenue into the data that they've stolen is short-lived because we're going to figure out very quickly how to shut it down. And so they know they have to sell it really quickly, like within 24 hours. And then another great use for that data is to humiliate people. So they now have this personal data. In addition to, if you don't give us the money to pay it back, we're going to start publicizing this information. There's fancy words like data exfiltration and doxing that are used to describe that. But really what they're doing is just trying to add pressure on you to say, we're going to start revealing this information. An example, a very well-known example in the market was when they were able to steal data that included the contract between Matthew McConaughey and the organization Campari, which makes a lot of hard liquors. And so he had a contract with Campari for advertising and promoting their liquors. And when Campari did not pay right away, they started releasing the information. So they published the contract and all of the terms that Matthew McConaughey had out on the internet so that people could see what the contract was. We don't want our contracts exposed like that. So that's another avenue of pressure for ransomware. So now let me talk about the defenses that we have in place and the defenses that we need to increase in order to protect ENSHI, all of the institutions, the system, and the regents and the employees from having sensitive or personal information revealed or stolen. One of the most important defenses against ransomware is mandatory security training for all humans in the organization. So the humans, how do they get in? The most common way is through a simple phishing scam. They tricked somebody into clicking a link. It's simple human trickery. They're using phone calls now, impersonating other people to trick people. So we need to have frequent security awareness training. It needs to be mandatory. And when I say frequent, what we do right now with SCS and with system administration is it's about 2 minutes per month. It's the frequency, and we've seen a real improvement in our security among the employees of SA and SCS by taking this training. We also installed a little button in email so that you can click the button to say, this email looks like a phishing scam. And then, so we get reports on people who are saying, no, I think this is a phishing scam. We also send out some test scams to see if we can also trick people into clicking a harmless link, but then we know what we need to do with our security awareness to improve everybody's perception of what could be a malware-infested email coming in. Of course, we're on heightened alert, watching for DDoS attacks, and we have all of our firewalls, and the technology is there. Our firewalls are deflecting approximately 80,000 probes per day. trying to break through our firewall. And we're oh, no, deflect, deflect, deflect. So the technology isn't, you know, we think of cyber criminals as being really super great computer programmers and network analysts that know how to work through and break through all these defenses. That's not really where it happens. Where it happens is through the humans. And that's why we need security training. That's why it's so important. We're also doing penetration testing. So we hire an outside party to test us and say, were you able to get through our defenses? And then they give us a report and tell us, okay, here's where we were able to get somewhere. Maybe we shouldn't have been able to get there. We also are doing internal penetration testing where we have a third party come in, imitate, or we give them an account, a test account, and say, are you able to get somewhere you should not be able to get? If you're a student, are you able to see data that you should not be able to see? Or if you're an employee, are you able to get somewhere and do harm where you should not be able to do harm? So we are hiring those outside services to make sure that we just don't think we're great, but we're actually testing whether we're how strong our defenses are. And the other important rule to follow is principle of least privilege. And that means that we give employees all of the rights and tools they need to do their job, no less and no more. It's called the principle of least privilege. It's very important to apply that across the board because it prevents people from having the ability to accidentally, or maybe intentionally, but accidentally hurt something that they should not have been allowed to hurt. We need to protect people from doing harm, yes. Intentional or not.
Yes, doctor.
So with that, I would like to just conclude my remarks and thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And as there any questions or comments? And if you could just keep it short because we are running behind.
Yes, Chair McMichael.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
If I may. Yes, Regent Moran for the record. Thank you for your time and effort on behalf of the system, of course. Have you had an opportunity to look at Senate Bill 220, which is the Internet Privacy Act that the governor passed in the last legislative session relating to Internet privacy and data protection?
I am vaguely familiar with it, but I could not speak to it specifically.
Okay. We'll pass it, and then I'll follow up at a later date. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Hearing none, and we will move on to agenda item number 8, new business. And do we have any new business? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to agenda item number 9, public comment. Do we have any public comment in Elko?
No public comment in Elko at this time.
Thank you. Any public comment in Reno?
No public comment in Reno.
Thank you. Any public comment in Las Vegas?
Excuse me, Chair McMichael?
Yes.
I apologize. We do have public comment for this meeting. Thought it was for next thing.
Yes, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
awesome. Good morning, everyone. My name is Jay Golin for the record, and I serve as the Director of Campus Wellness for ASUN. Today, I come here to show my support with my fellow students for the University of Nevada's budgetary priorities. More specifically, the CIP requests ADA and code updates. Throughout my time at the university, one of the biggest barriers to students seeking resources, services, and supplemental academic support is accessibility. The University of Nevada, an institution that emphasizes on innovation and prioritizing student success, is working tirelessly to get students back to engage with our beautiful campus in person. Having these requests for updates and accessibility will allow all students better access to tools that will enable them to fulfill their academic potential and boost their success during their time at the university. In the 2021 Campus Accessibility Forum, the university provided many statistics and items pertaining to accessibility and its effect on campus life, and the improvements we are seeking, which are outlined in these priorities. A component of the forum I'd like to share with you all is the number 2,912. These are students with reported disabilities that will have a better access to their education. Improved accessibility will also impact beyond the 2,912 students, fostering a safer campus which will propel our success at the university and better prepare us for the careers we are pursuing. Lastly, this will be a lifelong investment to the future of our institution and the future of our state, and further, the future students will become a part of the Wolfpack family. Thank you so much.
Is there any additional comments from Reno?
Regent McMichael?
Yes.
This is Chair McAdoo. If the public comment is in regard to the security committee, now's the time for that public comment. But if the public comment is on things to do with the agenda for the full board, it will be best if we save that until that public comment comes up in just a couple, 3 minutes.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. So is there any...
Thank you, Chair Michael and Chair McAdoo. We redirected public comment for the following meeting.
Thank you. No other comments in Las Vegas? Go ahead.
Good day, Regents and Chancellor Rose. I am Edith Fernandez. I am Nevada State College's Vice President for College and Community Engagement. I'm also a longstanding member of the Chancellor's Inclusion, Diversity, Equity, and Access Council. My public comment is on behalf of the IDEA Council, which has representation from all entry institutions. Chair McMichael and Vice Chair Geddes, we request the addition of an agenda item to the board's security committee to discuss how to apply a diversity, equity, and inclusion lens to the work that you do. Two examples to highlight, there's many, many more. At Nevada State College, on our Nevada State Safe app, one can easily access maps to each building. It helps with wayfinding. These maps mark the location as well to gender-neutral bathrooms, which provide vital access to our transgender and non-binary folks, as well as single parents who have children, young children with a different gender from them, folks who have caregivers, people who breastfeed, and even people who manually take insulin. The gender-neutral bathroom provides safety and security. Another example, we have heard throughout the day the importance of community policing and the use of partnerships with community groups is fundamental in carrying out community policing. We can help with building trust. We invite you to partner with the IDEA Council. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any additional comments from Las Vegas? Hearing none, the Security Committee is adjourned.